Dr. Neil N. Jaw is a neurosurgeon and concussion specialist. He joins us in studio again. When he was here last, was right after Tiger had a spinal fusion surgery, and he explained exactly what that was, and then went on to predict that Tiger would win again. And would you call us, or did we call you?
You have great staff and Matt over here. He was on the phone with me right away.
I'll bet he was. Well,
have you collected yet, by the way?
No, I think there's no bet, actually.
Tiger has...
Lean in a bit. There you go.
Tiger has probably taken care of the college fund for my kids, because I've taken every bet out there on Tiger. You know, and I kept saying, even when he was on his sofa, that he was going to come back and win. I still think he's going to break Nicklaus's record. We can talk about that another time.
Nah.
But it's just, he was on with Bob Hope and the Mike Douglas show at the age of 2.5 with that swing. You know, yep. The neuroplasticity is there, the gray matter in the brain, the motor cortex. He's never going to lose that. The second part is with the fusion operation, what I explained last time, Bob, is that we use more of our thoracic spine. So once he was at the Hero World Challenge and he was making all those birdies, we knew that the speed was there, the swing was there. And the final component is, psychologically, I don't think we've ever seen such a mentally tough athlete. The Tiger effect does exist. I was on your show, actually. You were away with Rob Foltz.
Okay.
And I had said, you know, Rory had said at the British Open, we're no longer afraid of Tiger like we used to be. And I came on the show and I said, look, I think I really like Rory, but I think he's going to eat those words up. Because once Tiger starts climbing up the leaderboard, that Tiger effect exists. And you saw in hole number 4 yesterday, Tiger makes the par up and down from the right bunker. Rory makes the bogey from the left bunker. And right on international TV, Rory puts his hand on his face, bends forward, and it's like, what am I going to do here?
I'll give you all that. I asked our last guest, Jay Busby was on with us from Yahoo Sports, and I asked him about the intimidation factor. And, you know, we thought that the players that Tiger was beating in the 2000s were intimidated by him. And there was every evidence to suggest that that was accurate. But there was also a belief that this new wave of players would not be intimidated by Tiger. Now, we weren't sure. In fact, we didn't think Tiger was going to get to this point. Did you see intimidation yesterday? I mean, Rory had a bad day, but was he intimidated by Tiger? Oops.
I don't know what happened to your mic. There you go.
All right, there you go.
Absolutely. I mean, look at Justin Rose. I mean, you know when we used to say in the early 2000s that everybody else would be playing for second? Justin Rose was playing for the FedEx Cup, not to win the tournament after a while. I mean, you know, I think what people forget is, and you know, my area of golf is analytics and probabilities and numbers. When you look at Tiger, he was number one in the field for scrambling this week, 17 out of 24, 71%. He was number one for one putt percentage, 51.4%. But one thing people don't realize is ever since this stat in 2006 has been collected by the tour, which is strokes gained on approach, Tiger has been number one every single year he's played. And what that means is it doesn't matter if Dustin Johnson or Rory McIlroy or Brooks Koepka is 20 yards in front of Tiger. He can decrease the loft on his driver, put the ball in play. But it's not just the proximity of the pin. He shot a 65 in round 3 because, as you know, Bob, he kept the ball below the pin, had uphill putts, and went on 5 birdies on a run of 6 holes. Other players can't do that the way Tiger does. He is probably the best pure iron player we've ever seen. And there's no indication. I mean, people used to say, oh, well, when you get older, the nerves for putting. Who's one of the top putters on tour right now? Phil Mickelson at the age of 48. So why can't Tiger continue? And I'm confident he's going to go on, if he stays healthy, to break Jack Nicklaus's record.
Okay, what kind of window, given the surgery that he has had, what kind of window health-wise does he have? And to that extent, is it open enough for him to beat Jack's record? Because I know Bob's pretty steadfast that it ain't going to happen.
Two responses to that, my friends. Number one, 2008 U.S. Open. Tiger had a torn ACL, stress fractures in his knee. A couple days before the U.S. Open, he played 9 holes with a knee brace and shot a 53 and couldn't even walk the course. Doctors said, don't play. He went on to play 91 holes on one leg with Rocco Mediate and won in a playoff of a playoff. This guy does not know pain.
That's 10 years ago. I don't care.
10 years ago.
2008.
40 is the new 30. I hope so, because I'm 40. But, you know, the other thing, too, and this the second response to that as well is that Tiger transcends the sport. I mean, he moves the needle like nobody else.
We get all that. We get all that. Okay, let's get to this point. You said you thought he had 3 or 4, maybe 5 years with this fusion, that ultimately, the wear and tear that caused that problem is simply going to be transferred to another disc or wherever it's going to be transferred to. You still believe that?
Well, you know, it's a possibility, but it's also possible that he'll be fine. The other issue, too, is that he's changed his swing. He's not swinging as violently as he did. He's cognitively playing the course much different. I mean, Tom Watson went into the 72nd hole at the British Open at the age of 59. I actually think that Tiger has a much larger window than we think. I really do believe he's going to beat Jack Nicklaus's record. I think he's going to win one major every 2 years, and he'll take it over in the next 10 years. Even if the next level gets affected, there's not necessarily scar tissue above that would prevent him from having an operation at that level. And now they know what they're doing. So I really do believe that he's got a larger window than people think, and he's going to go on to win more majors.
Could he have another spinal fusion?
He could. You can extend the fusion to an additional level. I mentioned last time that for 6 months, the fusion goes on and then the body takes over. So you don't require any instrumentation after 6 months. The body is fused itself.
Okay.
But, you know, the point I would make here is, and, you know, when you look at Tiger, there's other athletes we can look at. Look at Ben Hogan from 1949, the car accident.
Yep.
He lunged in front of his wife, had fractures throughout his body. They thought he would never, ever even walk again. He goes on to win the U.S. Open in 1950 and six more majors. That's just Ben Hogan. You look at Bethany Hamilton, who lost her arm in a shark bite. She goes on to win surfing competitions thereafter. Serena, Peyton Manning, two neck operations, wins a Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers, I mean, just a few weeks ago, the knee injury, carted off in the first half. They're down 20-0, comes back on one leg and wins 24-23. I know he didn't play as well yesterday. Tom Brady, 199th in the draft, sixth round. Greatest player of all time, potentially, in football. Look at Sidney Crosby, 108 games missed with a concussion. They thought he would never be the same player again. Two Stanley Cups, a World Cup, Olympic gold. Look at Gretzky. They actually thought that he didn't skate well enough. He didn't shoot well enough. I think one stat we never talk about is he has more assists to this day, 1,963, than anybody else has points. Yep. Jagr only has 1,921 points. Yep. Forget the 894 goals he has. Look at Jordan, got cut from his junior high school team. And the reason I bring these examples up is what makes Tiger different is he didn't just have one challenge. Tiger cognitively was affected. I mean, when he was caught with the DUI, he thought he was in California when he was in Florida. He was addicted to pain medication. Psychologically, what he's been through with the media. I mean, look at Brandel Chambly. Look at, Stephen Smith. All of these guys said he was done. He would never play again. I can understand where they're coming from. I respect these guys. Look at what he went through physically. Three knee operations, four spinal operations. The guy can't even sleep at night. He's texting Rory all through the night, all the other players. Yet he overcomes all of this cognitively, physically, and psychologically and comes back to win. And I think this transcends golf. This is beyond sport. What this is as a doctor, when I see my patients who have concussions, who have spinal issues, even today, I was inspiring them with the story of Tiger Woods. It's a human element story that look at what the capacity of the brain to overcome. You know, the final example, I was in Florida last week working with Sean Foley, I think I mentioned to you, and we shot videos for about 5 hours, and we were talking about one player. I did an HBO documentary on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel that's coming out tomorrow, and there's a seven-year-old boy who has one arm who's been beating all the PGA professionals, 22 out of 28 on par threes. He's been winning tournaments all over with one arm. And what that is when you look at his swing, you compare it to Ben Hogan, Sam Snead. He has more rotation than John Daly, goes well beyond parallel. Because he doesn't have a right arm, he stabilizes the club on his neck, generates the club head speed, is hitting the ball beyond 200 yards at the age of seven. He is at the age of seven where the tour players were at seven with one arm. And the reason I bring this up is the capacity of the brain to adapt to different situations. He's never taken a lesson. All of these adaptations. You look at his squat. You look at his bowed wrist like Dustin Johnson. You look at the reverse C like Rory McIlroy, like Jack Nicklaus. This seven-year-old boy has all that. And you know what, Bob? I played this kid all day. We were shooting with HBO. All day I was competing with him. I met him and I said, hey, do you want to have a chipping competition? Yeah, sure. Okay, Doc, let's go. All day we were grinding. Middle of the day, he was shooting with HBO, and I had beaten him one time. And he says to Brian Gumbel's staff, he goes, can we take a break? Because I need a rematch with the doc. So we go and we play on the HD Golf Simulator. HD Golf actually arranged all this. This is who I'm working with Sean Foley a good guy named Joe Murphy, who's really put everything together, a marketing genius. So I'm playing on the simulator with Tommy Morrissey, the seven-year-old boy, and the PGA professional Steve Cox, who's a great guy at PGA National, where they have the Honda Classic. He hits his shot. Tommy chose hole number 7 at Pebble Beach. You know the par 3?
Oh, yeah.
105-yard drop, 40 feet. So the PGA professional hits it 25 feet to the right of the pin. We thought it was a great shot. I get up there. I take a sand wedge, you know, and I'm like, I'm trying to beat Tommy. I hit it 8 feet to the right. Tommy gets up there. You're not going to believe this. In front of all of us, hits his shot. Looked good in the air. He's like, go, go, go. He starts running towards the screen. Hole in one on the simulator. Second time ever they've seen it on that hole. And he started going on the ground, rolling around, screaming hole in one. And then he gets up. And with his one arm, he pumps his fist in the air and he goes, take that, Doc. And that's what they named our new podcast. That's our new show. It's called Take That, Doc. And Foley was our first guest. Tommy's our second. And you know what, Bob? I'm going to invite you to be our first Canadian guest on Take That, Doc.
All right. Sounds interesting, to say the least. What are the risks for Tiger, health-wise, physically, now, as far as the back is concerned? None?
Well, I think, like you've mentioned and I've spoken about before, you always have to be worried about the adjacent level. But I really do believe that the way he's customized his swing, he doesn't have a coach anymore. I think he's really doing this the right way. You know, I asked that question to Sean Foley this weekend. And I said to Foley, I go, you know, like, how is Tiger able to do this mentally? And, you know, Foley has Justin Rose as his student now. And there's a reason why Foley has two number ones in the world. I mean, this guy is brilliant, full of integrity. He said to me, he goes, you know, Tiger used to jog 10 miles in his military boots in the hot sun of Florida. We would tell him, why are you doing this? Look at your knees, look at your back. But he said, mind over matter. And I guess what it is regardless of what he has to deal with his knees, with his back, he's one guy that you can never bet against. He will find a way to come out of it. I don't see any major concern with the back. If he stays healthy, nothing will prevent him.
The swing is less violent than it was. Actually, Sean was his coach when I started to see a specific change in Tiger when I saw his head drop as he was bringing the club down. So there was an obvious drop of his head into the hitting zone. I can't speak to the stresses that creates, but I know that was not the swing that I saw with an 18-year-old Tiger when he was winning the U.S. Amateur. That swing is pretty close to being where it was when he was 18 years old. I saw that first in the Bahamas and made note of it. He didn't win that week. He got a lot of birdies, and he finished middle of the pack. I think he finished 8th out of 16 or something like that. But the one thing I said afterwards is I said, I really like where his swing is at. It looks a lot more like the 18-year-old swing and a lot less than the swing he had with Sean.
Well, I think you make a great point. I mean, we always say that if you can make birdies, you can find a way to prevent bogey. The first thing to do is to make birdies. And that's why we knew at the Hero World Challenge that he led the field in birdies. So we knew he was on the right track. The swing looked much better. I think modern golf instruction has really maybe not been good for many golfers. Because, you know, a lot of things about movement of the head, like you described, the biomechanics of the spine. If you look at Jim Furyk's swing, which is all over the map,
yep,
and you compare it to Ernie Els, modern golf instruction is trying to get kids to swing like an Ernie Els and to avoid a swing like Jim Furyk. But interestingly, if you look at the biomechanical sequence, the kinematic sequence of both swings, they're exactly the same. And what we need to do is not try to get people to swing picture perfect, but have the right kinematic sequence where they generate the power from the ground up. And that's the pelvis, then the thorax, then the arms, and then to the club. So I think golf instruction is changing, and that's what we're working on. We're doing evidence-based golf now. That's what I worked with Foley on. That's what we're working with a lot of the PGA professionals around. We've built a real engine to bring evidence-based golf now and change the way current instruction is out there. And that's why I'm traveling a lot to the U.S., working Canada. HD Golf has been a great partner for that. They've putting up a simulator in my office. They're supporting the research that we're doing. You know, I got great kids working with me. I got Michael Forbes from the National. A lot of these kids who've graduated, mm-hmm, who are doing tons of research for me. You know how it is, Bob. Guys like you and me come out here on the air and we say things. People forget about your staff, like Matt, the great kids behind the scenes, the Michael Forbes for me, that put all the hard work in to collect the data to give to us to share with the viewers. So there's just so many people that are doing so many great things. And I think we're going to change the way we teach golf moving forward.
Last one for me. Do you subscribe to the theory that, you know, you talked about guys with different swings, you know, Jim Furyk with his unusual movement. Do you subscribe to the theory that there is only one place where the great players are identical or at least very similar, and that's at contact? And
yeah.
That really is where, that's what you have to concentrate on.
Yeah, 100%. You know, there's two theories there. The moment of impact, you know, the ball doesn't know what the club did until it gets to impact.
Correct.
Some people will argue that what happens at impact is guided a little bit at the transition of the downswing. And, you know, sometimes when you look at the numbers now, I mean, we have TrackMan, we have FlightScope, we've got HD golf simulators. You know, you can hit a straight ball, but you could still have your club path go in one direction and your faith path go in the opposite. They nullify each other and you have an inefficient swing. To give you a quick example, 9 degrees from the outside coming over the top on the ball, you lose 43 yards from compared to being neutral. So you have a 202-yard drive at a 95-mile-per-hour swing coming in from 9 degrees from the outside over the top versus 245 yards coming from the inside. And it's not as easy as teaching golfers, hey, swing from the inside. There's a lot of biomechanics involved, mobility issues involved, and different things like that. And we have a lot of data now. We have a lot of tools like the HD Golf Simulator, other simulators. So,
quick. We got to go. Fascinating stuff. Always good to see you.
I hope you come on my podcast.
Well, we'll see. You never know. Z, you got to get out of here.
Thanks for having me, Bob. And I'm gonna keep tabs here, okay? If he doesn't win and beat Jack's record, you owe Bob.
I'm going to take the doc out to play golf.